Travolting presents Bobbin for Robin. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Seize the Day. Enjoy the episode.
The time to seize the day. Stand down the odds and seize the day. By minute, that's how you win it. We will find a way. But let us seize the day.
I just want everybody to know that I'm singing this to Jeff while he's severely hungover.
What is that? What is this song?
It's Seize the Day from the Broadway musical Newsies.
Okay, I haven't seen Newsies.
Uncultured swine.
I haven't seen Newsies. I'm sorry.
Come on.
I haven't watched Christian Bale. I'm a Newsie boy.
That's the movie.
I think he's got an American accent in that.
He does, but it's really bad. It's a really bad, really, really bad
from
American
a man
accent.
Who one day becomes the king of the American accent, potentially.
Yeah, potentially. No, but that was...
I'm a newsy boy, isn't I?
That was Seize the Day from the original Broadway cast recording with Jeremy Jordan. I don't even know if the movie album is on Spotify. I don't think it is, and I'm not going to look for it.
You know, it's because we respect history.
Because I do not want to hear Christian Bale say, now is the time to... Like, yeah. Oh my fucking God.
He should have done it in his, like...
Horrendous.
In his Dick Cheney voice.
Now is the time
to seize the day, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Stuart, this begins the first in our trilogy of movies about seizing the day.
are you ready? Trilogy?
Yes, this movie is quite literally entitled Seize the Day.
Well, like...
And then two movies from now, we have The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, where one of the final lines of the movie is, and seize the day.
Oh, fuck. I didn't even realize that.
And then, like, a movie or two after that, we have Dead Poets Society, which is quite literally movie.
The catchphrase
of the movie is seize the day.
Yeah.
So this begins our trilogy of Seizing the Day.
Excellent.
However, this one I would more elegantly call Snooze the Day. Am I right, boys? Dab me up for that. Come
hold on. Hold on. Right. Hold on a second. I'm just going to...
Yeah, because we're starting with a... Oh, there we go. Yeah, we're starting today with a movie that... We're starting with a movie that was blocked by Robin Williams' management company from release.
You jumped there. You went there right away.
I wanted to just quickly say
just wanted to get there right away. This is a movie directed by Fielder Cook. Who's Fielder Cook? Don't know. Don't care.
He directed a lot of the TV series The Waltons.
Yeah.
Wait, no, he directed the movie that inspired The Waltons. I take it back.
Yeah. He is mainly a TV director. So Seize the Day. This comes out during Robin's kind of rut era. As we've mentioned in prior episodes, thank you for coming back, by the way, after hearing our amazing episode on Club Paradise. that was paradise of an episode, am I right?
I mean, this is the last thing he does before Good Morning Vietnam.
Yes. And this movie is quite bad, but I want to get into like sort of the context behind it.
Yeah, so, where's he at?
Well, so like he's in a rut period. He's more or less taking whatever movie he feels like will be good if he's in it. Like... Best of Times, he feels like he can fix that movie. And it's also like billed as a two-hander with him and Kurt Russell, who, as I said before, is not really on a hot streak, but he's at least like a rising star.
Yeah. He's a name who everybody recognizes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Club Paradise, Harold Ramis, Second City TV movie with a bunch of the Second City cast, but it was originally supposed to be John Cleese and Bill Murray.
Yes.
So when it turns out it's Robin Williams and Peter O'Toole, the dynamics don't quite match to Harold Ramis's vision. The movie quickly devolves into just like bit after bit after bit.
We love a good bit.
And then it just kind of like the result of which is that the movie doesn't really have a cohesive plot that you can pay attention to because yeah. you're being confronted with all these bits all the time. Seize the Day is like the epitome of like a small indie movie. This movie was made, I've been looking for the budget for a while and I can't seem to find.
It was made for very cheap.
Yeah, it was a very, very low budget. All shot in New York City. And Robin Williams takes this on because very much the script he relates to a lot. I'm going to give you like a quick overview for the audience of the script and then talk about Robin Williams here.
I also really quickly want to say what type of, this was designed as like an HBO movie.
Yeah, yes. Yes, it was.
That they wanted to like put out in theaters and then like.
His management company blocked it, yeah.
Yeah, but just like, it's just worthy of note that it is designed as a TV movie.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the space it occupies.
It was also funded partly by, they like applied for a grant that they got. It was like a Betterment of the Arts Endowment grant or whatever the fuck it's
called. Kennedy Center type stuff.
Something like that, yeah. So this is like very indie. It's going on a bunch of grant money. And Seize the Day, starring Tommy Wilhelm. It's a good, honest man. I'm just going to read the IMDb one. Who's fallen on hard times after losing his job. But what really gets to Tommy's scene is both his friends and family turning their backs on him one after the other. He tries to seize the day in vain. So Tommy's in the ruts. He loses his job. He's financially not doing so hot. His wife and him are separating.
Yeah.
And his career is in the toilet.
Yes.
Robin Williams is separating from his wife. And his career is heading towards the toilet.
Yes.
And this has a big scene where he like confronts his father about seeking his approval. So like it doesn't take long for Robin to see like, oh, this is like perfect for me.
We haven't talked a lot about Robin's relationship with his family.
Yeah.
Did he have a strained relationship with his dad that you know?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
So as I said a little bit of this background in the first episode, but like... Robin's parents, they've at this point now they live in Marin County, a suburb by San Francisco. And when he told his dad, like, "Dad, I want to be an actor," he was kind of starting off like, "Okay, that's fine, but maybe you should pick up another like side job, like welding," and which Robin will continue to joke on later on. But
welding, exciting.
But I don't think like his dad was ever like severely disapproving of Robin's like acting career. He certainly wasn't like cheering him on the sidelines and going to every single premiere. But there's a good one thing that is a little sad is talks about in the Good Morning Vietnam book, which we'll talk about next week. But Robin's dad, I think he passes away right before Good Morning Vietnam premieres. Which is like very sad.
Yeah,
it's
that's
the movie.
Tough.
It's the movie right before his like career actually takes off. But no, from what I understand, he has a pretty good close relationship with his parents. He's got two half brothers that he keeps in touch with on occasion. But I think the more upfront story here, Jeff, that I think you might be asking, is his relationship with Valerie, his first wife. That is completely crumbling and falling apart. I mean, since like Robin got famous, Robin immediately kind of fell into the world of Hollywood fame, drugs, affairs, alcohol, all the kind of things. After having Zach, he kind of like toned it down a little bit, but that wasn't sort of stopping his extra escapades. After he would perform, then go on stage, and then go party afterwards. That routine kind of never left.
Yeah.
And so... where Marcia kind of fits into this mold, and I've actually, this was a part of the book that I read today, not for this episode, but for a future episode, is, you know, and maybe we'll talk about this with your dad next week, I'm not sure, but like when Robin and Marcia's relationship came out into the fray, it was very much seen as like, oh, the nanny home wrecked the house. And Robin and Valerie both together say that that's not true.
Yeah.
That Robin and Valerie had been separated by the time like him and Marcia started a romantic relationship. But the timing of it just looked very odd and very suspicious. Yes. So, I mean, I'm more inclined to believe it because even Valerie herself came out and said, like, no, like, Robin had affairs while we were married, but he didn't start fucking the nanny while we were still together. Like, who wasn't the nanny anymore at this time. Marcia turned, like, became more Robin's personal assistant who traveled with him to all of his film sets everywhere. So that's where their relationship kind of started in that realm. But yeah, Robin picks this movie because, like, on the textual side of it, it feels very closely related to where he kind of is right now in his career and in his marriage. And I think the author of the biography puts a lot of emphasis, and I don't know if he's trying to kind of allude to something with this, but he puts a lot of emphasis in those scenes where he's acting. Who plays his dad in this movie?
Okay, what is that guy?
It's not Jerry Stiller.
No, Jerry Stiller's in this movie. No,
right.
I mean, that's...
Is it
Joseph Wiseman? Am I wrong?
Maybe. It might be Joseph Wiseman.
No,
I don't remember. I thought it was... or Tony Roberts?
This is the central problem of this movie.
I don't fucking know.
Okay, it is Joseph Wiseman. It is Joseph Wiseman who plays Dr. No in the original James Bond movie, Dr. No.
Okay. So... the author puts a lot of emphasis on those scenes with Robin and Joseph Wiseman, that he's like pleading to his father for some help in his time that he's not getting help. And his father just kind of turns his nose up at him. But like, I don't want to say that that's like supposed to be like Robin's way of saying his dad was not there for them, him and blah, 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 blah. Like, as far as I can tell, like they were not estranged by any context behind that, but still like a good, like, I think any kid, when they want to try to go out for something, any kind of profession, and they've not, like, hit the home run just yet, even if their parents are approving of it, they're probably still, like, psychologically, like, I'm not doing the thing I told them I'd be doing, so they must be sad and disappointed in me.
Everybody is living in the shadow of their parents.
Yeah.
Even if you have a great relationship with your parents, like, a lot of your life choices are calculated, like, with the knowledge of your parents' reaction. Like, you're either trying to impress them, surpass them, equal them, one of those, like, that's everyone.
But like, when he wins his Oscar for Good Will Hunting, like, he does thank his dad. I think he had a good relationship. I don't think there's not anything to read into this.
You know who didn't have a good relationship with his dad?
You
fucking guy in this movie, man.
That's all I have to say about the context of Seize the Day.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting as a thought experiment of, like, Robin's in a similar place as this guy, career-wise.
Right.
That's really about, like, the only interesting thing you can say about this movie.
It's also money. I don't want to just, like, be, like, very, like, blunt in saying that, but, like, it also is just money. Like, Robin's losing roles, and he's, like, he's now at this point... at this movie, I didn't say this last week or the week before, but I think it's really at the point of Seize the Day where Robin is not seen as a valuable name anymore. Like, if you put Robin's name on your movie, you'll make X amount of dollars. Seize the Day, it's like, as he's making Seize the Day, that's when, like, it really hits home of, like, Robin Williams is not a sellable name anymore. He used to be, but now, like, we can't put your name on a movie and sell it. And then Good Morning Vietnam completely changes that.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about the plot? It's based on a novel written by Saul Bellow.
Well, something that is interesting about this movie is that Robin describes this prior to release as a Jewish Greek drama.
Yes.
And it's worthy of note, Robin is not Jewish.
He's not Greek.
He's not Greek. Well, Greek is, but he described himself as Episcopalian in his life. But when I was doing research for this movie, because like this is such a specifically Jewish movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I want to say like knockoff Woody Allen style comedy.
Kind of, yeah.
It is totally. But I like looked up and I was like, was Robin Jewish? And I found out that he was considered an honorary Jew. And I find this in the Jewish Journal and the Times of Israel that he was considered an honorary Jew for his entire life, for his support for the community and various comedic bits about them, which is interesting. And I'm like, okay, is that why he's in this movie?
So if you make fun of Jewish people enough, you'll become an honorary Jew,
I guess.
All right.
But like, yeah,
In that case, I feel like Adam Sandler should be an honorary Jew at that
Adam
point.
Sandler's like a real Jew.
Oh, well, yeah.
He's in Uncut Gems. If you're in Uncut Gems, you're part. You're part of the family.
Yeah. Is Adam Sandler really Jewish?
No, yeah, he's very Jewish.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Extremely Jewish. But that's all I really wanted to say, because I did just watch this movie and I was just like, this is such a specifically Jewish comedy, like in the vein of like classic Woody Allen. Like, this movie is so much trying to be a Woody Allen movie,
mm-hmm.
And failing at every aspect.
Yeah.
But I was just like, okay, is Robin like Jewish? Because this feels like something you would need a Jewish actor for.
Right.
And knowing that he was very close with the Jewish community, but was not actually Jewish himself. Just relative context.
Right.
But yeah, this movie, Stuart, can I describe to you how I feel about this movie?
How do you feel about this movie?
This movie is like a puddle.
Okay.
It is shallow and rapidly evaporating from my brain.
Yeah, I honestly like couldn't say like I remember much of what happened in this movie, mostly because it was very hard to pay attention to the movie.
It's hard to pay attention, and then hard to follow what was happening.
Yeah, like from what I could understand, Robbie plays Tommy Wilhelm. He drives a beaten up shaggin' wagon of a car.
Yes. The opening scene is him like driving rapidly down a road because his life's out of control. Symbolism. Kids, you don't even have to go to film school. Just listen to this podcast and I'll tell you. He's driving the car down the road because his life's out of control. It's crazy. I just saved you $80,000 in student debt. Look at that.
You did.
No, learn how to use a camera, I guess.
His life is out of control. He's in shambles. He's a gambler.
Yes.
He's a very, very heavy gambler. He's like gambled most of his like life savings away.
Yes.
His wife is very much like counting on him to like find the next like job or thing, because like they're not doing so hot money wise.
That's true.
And that's when he meets Jerry Stiller.
Well, he is with like a new girl fully separated from his wife, right?
Right, but they're still like, oh wait, there's he's custody moved, things of kids.
Yeah, he's moved on to a younger woman who wants to be an actress.
Again, hey.
while his wife has basically full custody of the kids.
Yeah.
And this is the part of the movie where I literally had no idea what was happening, because it keeps doing flashbacks,
mm-hmm.
but never establishes that they're flashbacks.
Yeah, I didn't catch that they were flashbacks.
It'll just be like, he goes to New York and then it will just cut to him in Miami,
mm-hmm.
yelling at his dad. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And like, you know, you figure out that it's a flashback, but I was just like, are we going to establish the storytelling rhythm mm-hmm. of flashbacks, or are we just going to like cut to a flashback and not explain it?
Yeah.
It's like almost Lynchian, but without the intent of it.
Yeah. And so he leaves Massachusetts for New York City.
Yes.
And
going to the Big Apple.
He moves into the same hotel that his father is living in, with whom he has a very strained relationship. There's another close relation to Robin Williams in this movie. There's a flashback that shows like he changed his name and tried to become an actor, but then failed at it.
Yeah. Yes.
Seize the day, everybody.
I'm seized.
Seized.
Because he was a children's toy salesman.
Children's
right?
furniture salesman.
Furniture.
Yeah.
It's less exciting than I thought.
Don't think I remember this. I just have the Wikipedia in front of me.
Yeah, but he's living with his dad in New York.
Yeah. And then that's when he meets a Jerry Stiller, Dr. Tamkin.
One of the greats. Let's never forget.
And he speculates in the commodities market. He basically plays the stock market.
Stuart is dead ass just reading the Wikipedia and he's like, speculates in the commodities market. Do you have any fucking idea what that means?
He just like, he's in the stocks.
I know, yeah.
That's all it means.
No, he's not even in stocks. That's what makes this movie so like, where you're like, what the fuck are we doing here? Is he's not even betting on stock. He's betting on the commodity. So he's like, we're putting money into soy and the soy is going to go up.
It's stocks.
No, it's commodities. It's very different.
It's basically stocks.
Stocks are in company. Commodities are like you're betting on the price of like
milk,
corn. Like you're betting that corn will continue to be successful.
Is that still a thing people
do? Yeah, you can still do that. I could buy like 20 shares of corn right now.
Well, like I kind of want to buy like 20 shares of sheet metal with the tariffs.
Stuart, have you ever heard of the movie Black Hat with Chris Hemsworth?
No.
Okay, so it's a 2015 movie. It's like the least amount of money any movie has ever made at the box office. But it was directed by Michael Mann, who's a very accomplished director, Heat, whatnot. It was like his... Basically, the movie that almost ended his career, but he makes it called Black Hat. Wait, no, this is important. This is relevant.
Keep going.
So, Black Hat is a movie about Chris Hemsworth, like, a great super hacker that he bring in to find another hacker who's, like, destroying the world economy. Turn that shit off. Get that shit out of here. The punchline to this is worth it.
Okay.
The studio takes the movie away from Michael Mann and posts and, like, re-edits it.
Yeah.
And completely changes the flow of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Because in the original version, the first like cyber attack that happens against the U.S. is they cripple the soy market.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, what the fuck was that? And then halfway through, they cause a nuclear reactor to melt down. And that's like the big one. In the version that the studio took, they flipped the two events. So the movie starts with a nuclear reactor melting down. And everyone's like, well, that was crazy. And then halfway through the soy market collapses. And it's suddenly like, the entire government's like, we got to find the guy who did this. We're getting the soy guy, everyone. It's funny. It's another movie about commodities. Look, what else do you want me to talk about on the Seize the Day episode?
So,
we're not talking about the commodities market.
He talks Tommy into opening an account that Dr. Tamkin, Jerry Stiller, manages on a 50-50 basis. And so, but Tamkin's like, you got to put up most of the money.
You got to put up everything.
And so he does that. And then what do you know? The prices start declining. And so Tommy's like, we got to fucking cash in. We got to recover our losses. And Tamkin, I'm just going to read the line in the Wikipedia. Not like I haven't been doing that already. Tamkin urges Tommy to remain calm and, quote, seize the day.
And there's the title of the movie. Seize the Day, gentlemen.
My upstairs neighbors are moving some shit around because I've heard...
What they're doing is more exciting than watching this movie.
It's been going on since like last night.
Stuart, I would rather move furniture than watch this movie, potentially.
So
it's not that bad.
Eventually, what they were like betting money in completely collapses.
Yes.
Tommy loses everything.
Soy collapses for some reason or another.
Do you know if they bet into soy?
They bet. That's literally the movie's about. They bet, put all their money in soy.
I didn't know it was soy.
Jerry Stiller would be like, the soy is going to go up, I tell you.
Why?
I don't fucking know. He says it in the movie. I can't remember.
So Tommy has lost all of his money.
Yes.
And his wife is like, you're never going to see the fucking kids. And then there's a scene where he like talks to his dad and is like pleading for like money. This happens like three times throughout the movie.
Yeah, and it's also worthy of note that the reason he's so estranged from his dad is because his last name was Adler and he changed it to Wilhelm to seem less Jewish.
Yeah,
And he feels immense guilt about this.
Mm-hmm. Don't remember that.
Yeah, that was the one element of this movie that's why I Googled, like, is he Jewish? And, like, because it's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Especially being a Hollywood actor.
So doesn't the dad just say, like, I have, like, a principle that to never give my kids money?
Yes.
And he'll raise you better?
Yeah.
That's, like, one of the biggest things. It's like, no, I'm sticking by my morals to never give you money. And then Robin Williams is like, but, Dad, I'm drowning here. And his dad's like, cool.
Yeah.
That's
I'm drowning here. I did write that Robin's great in the drunk scene, where he confesses his inner struggles. I also just wrote lard and soy futures.
Lard. Large.
Large. Sorry. Lard Marge.
Large.
And other notes I have, guy is bad at parallel parking is always a good joke.
I'm starting to look up all the stuff for the next episode.
No, I
really don't have anything else to say about this movie.
I feel bad for like those at home who's like just listening to us kind of shrug, but I really don't know what else to say about this movie.
Well, like, because the movie, the very ending, he goes to a Jewish funeral.
Yes, it ends with him like just basically breaking down.
And they all look at him like, oh, did he know that person? And then he just keeps crying and the movie cuts to
black. He realizes that his life has been a failure, which is sad. I feel bad for him.
Sorry, not the right one.
Robin Williams is inherently like very empathetic actor.
Yeah.
So you do feel bad for him when something like this is happening.
Yeah.
It's just this whole movie is like borderline incomprehensible. I don't know what's happening in it. I'm not shocked that his management company, once it's about to come out, goes to HBO and says, do not put this in theaters. We do not want to torch his career with this.
Yeah.
Which ends up being a good move because he goes on and makes Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah. That is the good thing is he goes on to make a great movie after this.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie is definitely like you already said, it aired on PBS. It aired on PBS, never got to theatrical. I think it did one run in like a film festival.
Yeah.
And that was basically it. And since then, this movie's kind of been very forgotten. I think what people watch this movie because they look up Seize the Day, Robin Williams, and they think it's Dead Poets Society, and they find this movie.
Yeah. It's like, you Google Robin Williams, Seize the Day, and you watch this movie by accident.
I don't remember him wearing a fedora in Dead Poets Society. I wonder what this movie is.
What if this was a prequel to Dead Poets Society?
This is a Dead Poet Society. Sorry. Very sorry to our listeners. Oh, my God. I'm not even... I slept pretty well. I'm not that tired. You're the one that's like hungry.
No, you're the... Like, this movie tires you.
It really does, though. But all that being said, next week, Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah, next week we'll have Good Morning Vietnam.
The Wise Words of Jerry Carson. You're here to talk about your movie called Hello Vietnam. Yes, Good Morning Vietnam is next week, and yes. It should be no surprise that that is the movie that like explodes Robin's career.
Yeah, it's a great movie, and we have a really good episode in the can for you guys. Yep. You get to listen to about that.
Whoa! We not recorded it.
We recorded it already. After this week, where you're like, oh. Next week you got, get ready.
Yeah, that one's a good episode. Yeah. Tune in for that one. Do you have any other?
All right.
Thank you everybody for listening.
Large soy futures. Don't get invested in them. Jerry Stiller, good actor. Doesn't really have much to do here. Yeah. I have nothing else to say about this movie. Like I said, it's like a puddle evaporating from my brain rapidly.
Nothing happens.
Nothing great happens.
So thank you all so much for listening. Tune in next week for Good Morning Vietnam. Special thanks to Rebecca for the graphic design, Michael Van Bodegum for the theme music. Remember to rate, review, like, comment, subscribe, share on whatever platform you're listening on. See the Day is not 30 minutes long, which is the length of our episode, which means we should hopefully not get angry comments of people clicking on this thinking they're watching the whole movie.
It could be funny, though.
But it could be really funny. So if you clicked on this and you were expecting a 30-minute Seize the Day movie and you were let down.
Mistaken.
Sorry. It's a podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week for Good Morning Vietnam.
Good Morning Vietnam!